Hi, good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. We were waiting for the stragglers. Welcome. We're happy to see you all here, friends and new faces. Appreciate it. Cancer Progress Defined Health acquired the meeting about 6 years ago. This is our sixth production of Cancer Progress, but it's in its 28th year.
2012 is the first one I refer to.
It is known for, Jeff's correcting me, but that's okay. For the interactivity, for the quality of the networking, for the dialogue, we have people here from all walks of the cancer drug development spectrum, from diagnostics and big data through regulatory, through investors, and the biopharma industry. So we encourage you to, we're going to have mics and mic runners, I hope. My guys get the runner part right, so that anytime you have questions, we welcome them and we welcome the dialogue. I just want to do a few housekeeping notes. Did not introduce myself. I'm Ginny Lobel with Defined Health. Apologies for that. There is breakfast on the fourth floor both days, and lunch will be down on the fourth floor as well. There's a charger in the back of the room if anybody needs to charge anything. The reception tonight is really nice, and it's up on the ninth floor in the atrium, and maybe it will stop raining and be a beautiful starry night up there. We encourage you all to join us there and just to have a great time and enjoy the meeting. And I'm going to quickly introduce Jeff Bachman. And he's going to kind of set the table for us this morning, and then we'll have our keynote speaker come up after that. So welcome. Have a great meeting. This is Jeff Bachman, who's the now Senior Vice President of Defined Health and heads up our thriving and busy oncology practice.
Thank you, Ginny.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks, everyone. Nice to see so many friends, no enemies, some strangers. Thank you for all being here bright and early. I'm just going to give 10-minute kind of overview as I typically do, and then we'll get to the more important matter of the keynote by Greg Simon and then the opening session. So as you can see, Cancer Progress 2017, showing my literary side, a quote from Tennyson there, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. So as the title of the conference has said, both before we acquired it and since, it's about progress in cancer. We may now and then pick on some of the challenges, hopefully not overemphasize those, and as much laud the successes that we've made, particularly in the past few years. Where's my controller? But I also wanted to emphasize kind of where we've come just in the time that we've kind of been running Cancer Progress. And the first one, at least, that I have in the directory is 2012. And back then, in my opening talk, was really kind of the beginnings of kind of the IO wave, if you will, having had the approval in 2011. So a snapshot of the updated Hanahan and Weinberg key elements within cancer, moving from the original kind of six elements and now starting to include metabolism and immuno-oncology and other aspects. And, of course, there was a lot of talk then and in some of the years leading up to our taking over the conference about the issue of personalized medicine and stratification, both in a positive and in a negative way. I mean, certainly the virtues of having a more directed, targeted, and hopefully more efficacious agent, but there was also a lot of concern and discussion about, are we fragmenting the market? And I remember a particular panel with some strategic marketing people, et cetera, about some of the concerns that we were going to be creating all these subfragment markets and how was that going to be managed and how valuable was that going to be. And, of course, I ended that opening talk in 2012 with getting a little science and geeky talking about some of the issues in the evolution of cancer and the inherent plasticity and heterogeneity, which, of course, has not changed at all and which, you know, we'll maybe touch on a little bit through the course of the day, because one of the interesting aspects that's considered a positive attribute of the immune system is that it's as plastic as the tumor is, and therefore maybe having the best chance to be deployed against such a diverse and changing foe, and especially trying to perhaps move it earlier into adjuvant setting or even earlier stage disease. So in the 27 years or so that Cancer Progress itself has been in existence, obviously there's been a lot of progress and a lot of changes from the early days of, do I have a pointer on this, Daryl, or? No, all right, well, from the early days of, you know, really what I call the beginnings of kind of the modern oncology market with Taxol and then later Taxotere, et cetera, and clearly the leuprolides, et cetera, very small market to now where it is really a dominant market both in sales and in growth, and you can kind of see some of the same names remain there over the numerous years, and others, some newbies start to show up. And aside from the the absolute sales and how much this market has changed, as I said, it's clearly a very significant growth area and a very important area for most major pharma companies in terms of, you know, now some of these huge growth rates are coming off kind of smaller bases or bases that had kind of eroded and then reinvented, like BMS, who kind of lost the cancer franchise and then reestablished it, but clearly very important to pharma. And there are lots of reasons for that, not only the sales and the growth, but also it leads in terms of some getting the quick-to-market paths with breakthrough therapy and also just the absolute number of blockbusters that are generated. So a very attractive place to be, but of course, what drives that? What drives that is increasingly beneficial therapies for patients, and we're going to talk about that because, you know, there still remain challenges. We're still not where I think we had hoped we would be, but hopefully we're accelerating on that. And we have a tremendously rich pipeline to reflect that potential and hope, and hopefully not hype, in terms of a lot of classic, still ongoing, targeted agents, as well as the whole new wave of immuno-oncology agents, which more and more are entering into development, as well as taking up some 800 or 1,000 clinical trials right now, both in monotherapy and combination, many with checkpoints, but not all. And so that idea of the progress that cancer is making, I think, is well illustrated on the somewhat busy chart, but there's another one after that will kind of simplify it, but which really shows you kind of how these checkpoint inhibitors, monotherapy and combination, benchmarked against each other and benchmarked against standard of care, usually chemo, are starting to change not only the overall response rates, but also the survival, particularly in something like melanoma, which was more or less a death knell, and now you're having, you know, 20-plus percent patients with very long, durable remissions, perhaps akin to a cure. And what you have here is simply just a stacked chart of just overall response rates. And you can see that even in the best case in lung, by the way, not a cancer that anyone felt was going to be the most immunoresponsive historically, so we constantly get surprises, you can see that we're only about 40% in the ORR. Obviously, when you start to combine, you start to up that, you get some more long-term durable responders, you also get an increase in toxicity, and there are going to be more and more stories coming out of the toxicity, and I think we'll touch on some of that today as well. But as I said, despite some of those tremendous advances, there's still, it's not spreading like I want. That chart that's under there shows you kind of the minimal improvements in PFS and OS, and you can just see on the right column how in many of these cases where we are with oncology, not all, you know, all types of oncology, classic small molecules, antibodies, and IO, we're still, you know, not where we'd want to be in many cases. We're still talking about incremental advances, still may be meaningful in some of those settings, but the major sea changes, the poster child of the Gleevec and CML, or the major sea change in melanoma, or the ongoing sea change in lung cancer, as will be talked about in the upcoming panel, you know, we still have a long way to go. And so there was a recent JAMA article here talking about this very concept that these incremental gains, we even had an email discourse, I think it was yesterday, linking in the idea of value and pricing, et cetera, with kind of the history of oncology and the incremental gains and all the important things that we've learned going along before we can get to where we're at. But nevertheless, trying to shake things up, trying to advance things more rapidly and more definitively and aim higher, I think, is where we're all about. And I'm sure we'll hear some of that in the keynote coming up shortly from Greg about the cancer moonshot and now with the Biden Foundation. So the level of unmet need still remains. You can still see that there are some very recalcitrant cancers, such as pancreatic, where the death rate is nearly equal to the incident rate. And the pipeline, while it more or less mirrors some of these, there's still, you know, some of these high unmet need areas still certainly need tremendous advances. And that's not to say a gemabraxane or, you know, other approaches are not adding value. But again, we would hope to ultimately break through those incremental 3, 4, 5 month advances and get to things more dramatic, particularly more durable remissions in a higher percentage of patients. So while we have moved towards what we might call cures for some subsets of patients, such as in melanoma or in lung increasingly, with the idea that particularly immuno-oncology can start to kind of shift this curve up and ultimately with combinations and maybe combinations with targeted agents or targeted application of IO, we can get to the equivalent of these functional cures, if not outright cures, either with one-time treatment or ongoing chronic treatment, which is, I'm sure, something that will be touched on in the very last panel of the session tomorrow on the payer panel, because thinking about how you price for, say, a limited duration of use versus chronic use, let alone combination use, is something that's going to be of increasing importance. And, of course, all this activity and interest in oncology, the sales, the growth rates, the size of the franchises, the size of the pipeline, all leads into tremendous deal-making. This is a slide from last year, our analysis, and in all the boxes in red of these top 10 deals, both in total value and upfront value, are IO in some way. And not surprisingly, when you take a look at the 2016 deals, you basically see the same thing. Almost, well, certainly half, not the majority of either total upfront or total value deals are IO-related in some way. So it's an important place to be, as I have alluded to a few times and will be touched on that panel that Ed will be chairing. We hope that the interest is being driven by the unmet needs, certainly driven by the ability to improve quality of life for so many of these patients, but clearly some of the aspects of how quick you can get to market and the investment, not to denigrate the risks in development oncology, but another aspect that must drive it is the tremendous cost. And so this is not so much the elephant in the closet anymore, and so putting it right front and center, and of course it's ending up the session for the conference tomorrow, but I think increasingly this discussion of value and how much value is added, whether in an incremental benefit to patients or hopefully more meaningful benefits, is going to be very important. So the real hope may be that we can, as I said, begin to treat cancer not only the advanced patients and cure more and more of them or have an equivalent of a cure with chronic treatment, but to move it earlier, move it into adjuvant, neoadjuvant, as many of the IO agents are going, for example, but also to prevent that secondary recurrence or even ultimately maybe primary prevention, which of course is very much dependent on being able to diagnose cancers early. So in, I think, 2012, we actually had a panel about chemo prevention, which no one came to, Ed likes to say and joke about, because one, it's an off-putting name, but also what did it really mean? How do you move a drug into early prevention? First, you have to diagnose those patients. Then you have to have a tremendous therapeutic window. Then you have to have a trial that goes on and on for a long time. So there are a lot of challenges, let alone the targets. There was a belief that a lot of targets might be very different. Well, it actually turns out there may be a lot of targets that are in common between very early dysplastic changes and frank neoplasms. So the idea of being able to think and move earlier, and some also IO trials are starting to go into stage 3A, if not 2B trials. And clearly, everyone saw this tremendous raise, $900 million Grail, to try and diagnose and identify cancer early, which, of course, if we could do, then everything else would follow. You wouldn't be left treating only the sickest of patients and advanced stage patients. And while those advances are great, it would be great not to have the patient go through that in the first place. And so dreams of 100 years, I'm really referring specifically to COLI here because there will be a strong theme of IO through the 2 days, not just on the IO sessions. It is becoming a reality. So this is a quote from Bradbury. In science fiction, we dream, but also in science, we dream, and many of these dreams are coming to a reality. So with that, I will thank you for coming bright and early, and I'm going to now turn the podium over to Greg Simon, and I have a great honor to do so. He's now the executive director of the Biden Cancer Initiative of the Biden Foundation, and he's the former executive director of the White House Cancer Moonshot Task Force. So thank you for your attention, and welcome, Greg Simon.